You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Hey guys, welcome to the Best Practices Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all across the country. And I've got an amazing authority today. And you have all these things that go on in your head when you're creating your dental practice, and it creates all this calcification around what you think you can't do and can do. I've got Dr. Leonard Hess, I call him Lenny, from the Dawson Academy, one of the senior faculty members. And we're going to start dissecting this and how you truly create an awesome restorative practice. So do me a favor, grab a pen and hit the share button. You don't want to miss this.
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Barrett is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you're looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
First of all, I'm super pumped about this particular episode. I got my good friend on here, and I'm just going to say a couple things before we get rolling. You know, first of all, I'm grateful you guys are watching. This is so much fun because we're getting so much feedback on different topics, and today is no exception. We're going to go right into the mind of a great restorative dentist, and I've got a great person to help us dissect all that. Now, we are shooting this live on Facebook. So as you're watching the live broadcast or you're even watching a replay, please add a question. We love your questions so much. I love them so much. We've got what's called Gratitude Mondays. We're just giving away a free Apple iWatch for anybody that asks a great question, along with two tickets to Activate. So I'm just grateful. We're getting great ones already this week. And this particular topic today is really important because we create all these things in our mind that we think are true, but they're not really true. So I asked my friend, Dr. Lenny Hess, could jump on. He's like, yeah, let's do it. Now, I got to say this. There are very few people in dentistry that combine excellence and class and style in a way that you go, that's really cool. But you're going to see in just a second, Lenny's a powerful dude. So Lenny, thank you so much for being on, brother. I really appreciate it.
Hey, I am super psyched to be here, and I'm ready to have a great hour with you.
Oh, dude, we might even talk for 2 hours, but you're one of those stylish guys. Like, even when I was at the Dawson Academy alumni meeting, which everybody's got to go to, like, everybody's dressed really well, and you're just dressed really hip. I'm like, dude, you got to take me shopping. I mean, you look well, you speak well. And I ask, you know, John Cranham, I go, give me the scoop on Hess. He's like, I'm just going to tell you, that guy's a rock star, one of the up and coming rock stars. So I want you to tell your story, and I'll tell a little bit of your story. But you're a restorative dentist in Charlotte, right? You practice in Charlotte?
Yeah, in Monroe, North Carolina, which is just outside of Charlotte.
Okay. Who is Dr. Lenny Hess?
Well, first of all, let me just give you a plug and let you know how awesome you were at the alumni event that we had last month. You always rock it. And, you know, I've heard you quite a few times over the years, and I just say it gets better every time I see you. So it was awesome to have you guys back at the alumni event as well. So a little plug
Thanks,
for
brother.
You.
Thanks, man.
Absolutely. Well, who I am is I'm a complete care dentist. I practice in Monroe, North Carolina. I've been in practice for going on 18 years and a couple of months. And what I am is I'm a passionate dentist because I love what I do. You know, I really love the fact that as dentists, we get to change people's lives. And I feel very blessed because, you know, I don't think that there's really a lot of professions out there that they get to say at the end of the day that we change people's lives. And that's what we get to do as dentists. And that's why I'm always so excited and always so excited to have the opportunity to teach my fellow dentists at the Dawson Academy. And, you know, so who I am is I'm somebody that's passionate about what I do, passionate about my life. And I absolutely love to be involved in this really awesome profession that we have. And when you're saying, like, tell your story a little bit, one of the experiences that I had when I was in dental school, which really kind of helped to set me on the path that I ended up on, was that I went to dental school at Northwestern in Chicago. And my apartment building was right next door to the ADA headquarters on Chicago Avenue. So one of the great things about living in Chicago is that, you know, the ADA, they were always bringing in speakers almost every week, and you'd have access to go hear these speakers. And then the midwinter meeting at that point in time, it was 4 days of CE. And so we could go to that for free. And so one of the great experiences that I was able to kind of experience during my dental school years was I got to see a lot of speakers in dentistry. And one of the things that I noticed when I was going through all this is that all that they were talking about had nothing to do with anything that I was learning in dental school.
Wow.
And so that kind of created this awareness in my brain that's like, wow, I really need to make sure that once I get out of dental school, I need to learn to do what these guys are doing. And so what I did is right out of dental school, I started taking some relatively expensive and lengthy continuums to try to improve my clinical skills. And that's a long time ago. That's where I actually ran into Dr. John Cranham, and he really kind of helped set me on the path that, you know, has brought me to where I am today.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Now, I got to say this too. Like, you're a man of many talents. You are a musician. You've actually played Carnegie Hall. So this guy, you're not looking at just a regular dentist. This guy's got mad skills. So what was that like playing? When did you do Carnegie Hall? When did you do that?
I was like 17 years old.
Wow.
And it was a long time ago. It was like 3 or 4 years ago, right?
Okay. Yeah. Well, you look that young. Yeah, you look like a pitcher in the in Major League Baseball. That's what you look like. You look like one of those stylish guys. Yeah,
appreciate that.
Yeah. So you played Carnegie Hall. Great time.
Yeah, as a jazz musician, I was privileged when I was in high school to be one of the better jazz bands in the country. We toured all over. We played with Count Basie, and we played with Ed Shaughnessy and a bunch of crazy people. So it was a real good experience. And, you know, obviously being in front of people at an early age kind of helped me prepare for, you know, being in front of people now.
Yeah. Now talk about that too, because being a senior faculty member at Dawson, that's pretty amazing role that you have. How long have you been doing that, and how did that happen?
So I started lecturing and started teaching in 2005. And that was when I started doing full day courses on my own. And as my teaching evolved and as my clinical skills evolved, and I just got the opportunity to come in as an associate faculty member of the Dawson Academy. And then right around, I think it was 2011, 2012, I was became a senior faculty member. So it's been a great privilege, you know, getting to spend time. And I was just in Florida last weekend at our third seminar, Advanced Problem Solving. And, you know, Dr. Peter Dawson, who's, you know, our founder and is still actively lectures at 87 years of age, and which is amazing because I can't think of anybody else in the world who is relevant at what they do at 87 years old. It's just, he's a captain of industry, and he's a living legend. And so to have the opportunity to spend time with him and to also be able to learn from him, and then also have the privilege of passing along the information that he's garnered over these years, is just an absolute real pleasure. And it's a real privilege.
Yeah, Pete changed my life at a very young age, and he's 87 and he's sharp as a whip. I hope I can go to the bathroom at the age of 87 on my own.
So if I can feed myself at 60, I'll be happy.
That is awesome. And being, you know, in your teachings, so you get to see dentists from all over the world. Like, you guys are global now. You're not just in Florida. You guys are going overseas teaching.
Yeah.
You get to see a lot of people coming. And you and I were talking about this title. I love this title, like, letting your practice be the source of your happiness versus your happy mess. Describe what that means. I want you to write a book on this. I told you, you got to write a book. Now, what does that mean?
You know, I think a lot of dentists, we kind of get ourselves into this trap where our life becomes, instead of happiness, it becomes a happy mess. And so a happy mess is having a chaotic, out of control life while you're leading everybody else to believe that your life is perfect. And, you know, this, I think, kind of gets perpetuated by social media these days. It's, you know, everybody is reframing their pictures they take, they're photoshopping, they're, you know, I like to joke around with my friend that you can take a picture of you in your kitchen and the kitchen's a mess and your spouse is yelling at you and the kids are crying, and you can just crop that out and just, you know, make it look like, hey, I'm having the most perfect day in the world. And, you know, life isn't necessarily perfect every day. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes we kind of fool ourselves into thinking, especially maybe if we're comparing ourselves to other dentists and we're thinking, gosh, you know, they got everything together. Their life must be so perfect. And meanwhile, inside, you know, they might be actually having a happy mess inside.
Right. I don't know who said this. Maybe it was Roosevelt or somebody. Somebody said comparison is the thief of joy. And you saw this. The University of Pittsburgh did a study and they found that young adults that were on social media, specifically Facebook, more than their friends were 2.7 times more likely to be depressed or suffer from depression because they look at everybody else's lives and they go, wow, everybody's. And you're right. I don't post like the arguments I have in my house. I'm like, oh, this is a good argument. Hold on. Let me get this one. Do you know what I mean? Or I'm yelling at my kids. I'm like, hold on, let me get this because I want to show everybody I'm real. You know, you don't do that. Yeah. And so you, as a dentist, you can fall into a trap where you think everybody else's life is so good. And you actually have what are called Bruelles, B-R-U-L-E-S, right? So,
well, yeah, absolutely. So, and this is nothing that I made up. So I'm actually kind of like stealing this from Mindvalley. Okay. And there's a guy that started Mindvalley, his name is Vishen. And he talks about, he's really good with coaching people to help with some of their weaknesses or deficiencies that they may have that are holding them back from being successful. And what he talks about are these Bruelles, which are, I don't want to swear on this show, but we'll call them bull crap instead of something else that starts with an S.
Right.
Bull crap rules. And there are these rules that sometimes that are imposed on us, whether it's by our family, by our society, by our profession, by our religion, whatever, that really controls and will govern our lives and keep us from making the best decisions that we can make sometimes, or maybe being the best people that we can do. And so I think there's a lot of these rules that we have in dentistry that are holding a lot of us back. And it affects maybe the decisions we're making from our clinical skills, our clinical judgment, our dealings with insurance, or how we handle money or finances, how we handle communication with our patients, how we handle communication with our staff members. Right. I think there's so many of these rules that a lot of times we subscribe ourselves to that we don't realize that we're being held back within our profession by these rules.
Yeah, absolutely. And so take us through this, because from an educational standpoint, I'm just going to go right there, because a lot of people will say, go to the Dawson Academy. And they're like, well, I don't know. You know, I don't know if I could do that, or I don't know if it's worth it. And when they go down there, you are so good because you talk about creating assets versus liabilities. What you want to do is create your thinking, your practice, everything as an asset. Don't perpetuate this so that it becomes an out of control liability. So as you see people come all over the world and they sit in your class, what are some of the things that you see that come to the surface as they start to become aware of what's possible?
Well, absolutely. And it's, you know, it's so interesting because, you know, having the opportunity to teach in Japan, in Germany, I've taught in Poland, in Canada, every country that I go and I teach in, it's so funny that it doesn't matter what language you speak or what country you practice dentistry in, we all have the same problems, you know, no matter what. A common one, we're talking about education. One of these rules would be that, well, geez, if I just went to dental school, I don't need to even think about spending money on continuing education for 5 or 10 years. Dental school, it's really, you're being prepared at a minimal competency level. You come out of dental school, you're dangerous, right? Because you've been educated to pass a minimal competency examination. And that's actually the time more than ever that we need to get in there and invest in ourselves to take our practices or our personal skills to another level. And well, one of the things, of course, that's challenging is the amount of debt that students are coming out with these days in dental school. It's stifling. You know, I graduated with about $250,000 of debt. And that was almost 20 years ago, which was really stifling for me at that point in time. And but now I'm hearing about, you know, couples that maybe they got married in dental school and they're graduating with like $1 million student loan debt. Mm-hmm. And I don't care who you are. That's a big nut to crack. You know, over the years. And I don't know how many houses you want to buy over your lifetime, but granted, education, that's the best debt you can have. And so it's hard sometimes, I think, with our young dentists to motivate them. And when it comes to, like, when we talk about what we learn at the Dawson Academy, you know, we have a 7-course core curriculum, and all these courses are basically 2.5 or 3 days long. And so it's a major commitment, not only from time away from your family, but also financially. Right. And, you know, one of the common experiences that I get is I get the young dentist saying that, man, I'm so glad that I really made this investment now, because now I have the, my entire career to reap the benefits of this investment that I made in myself. And then I hear the dentists that are, you know, 15, 20 years out, and they're thinking, oh, if I had only, you know, had exposure to this or listened to somebody that was telling me to come to the Dawson Academy earlier, gosh, my practice would be so different right now. But it's not that they can't change their practice the way it is. It, sometimes it's just a little bit more momentum that they need to get a push in the right direction.
Right. And I'm going to piggyback on that too, because what you're saying is incredibly powerful. I get this pushback all the time. People say, well, I can't afford it. And then the cliche thing is you can't afford not to do it type of thing. But the real, here's the truth of it is, you meet a dentist that does this right away. The Dawson Academy has so much to offer. I mean, and it's a lot, you know, a lot of these, just not just technically, but relationally. What you come back with is not so much the training, it's you think differently. Because if you're watching this right now and you're a 32-year-old dentist, a big part of why you're stuck is not your hands, it's not your body, and it's not so much the environment, it's not insurance, it's not what Delta's doing, it's how you think. And what you're talking about, Lenny, is this, is taking this thing that controls your whole life and just constantly improving it as an asset, and you get better and better. I hear, you know, I get the same thing all the time. People go like, I should have met you 20 years ago. I could have changed my hours and watched my kids grow up. And I'm like, that's a tragedy. You know, everybody can start somewhere. But if you're watching this right now, one thing I want you to is just change your thinking, you change your life. So, you know, take us into this, because I have a lot of Brules, and you brought up a couple of them. Where do you start with the, you know, reprogramming of a Brule?
Well, one of the hardest things and one of the most common questions or fears that I think that a lot of dentists will express when they come in through the academy is they get about three or four courses in and the brain cannot perceive what it has not been trained to see, right? So now they've been trained to see all these different aspects of diagnosis or wear, migration, mobility, temporomandibular joint issues, muscle soreness, all these components that they're examining. Now they're finding problems in their patients. And now they're thinking, my goodness, well, you know, I've been in practice now for 15 years and I've had this patient that I've been watching his front teeth wear down over all this time. And the patient doesn't complain that anything's hurting. Right. Insurance isn't going to pay for it because they only want to pay for decay. And now I'm going to come back and tell this patient that their teeth are worn into dentin. And now I'm concerned about it. And they may ask, well, geez, why weren't you concerned about this 7 or 8 years?
Right.
And so dentists, a lot of them come there thinking, my goodness. So we like to think that either we have an asset or a liability. Mm-hmm. And a lot of dentists, you know, we're weird people. I don't know if you've noticed, Kurt.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we're weird.
Yeah.
Right. So what happens is, you know, what we need to, instead of always going negative and trying to create a liability for what we have, is understand that we have an asset. So if you have a patient that's been coming to you for 15 years, that's an asset, right? Because if they didn't like you or they didn't trust you, they wouldn't be coming to you for 15 years.
Right.
The reality is we know there's lots of other places they could go. And so that relationship that you have with that patient is actually the most wonderful asset in the world, because you may be able to now sit that patient up and you'd say, geez, you know, Mr. Jones, first of all, let me thank you for the fact that you've been my patient for 15 years. Yeah. And the reason why I want to talk to you right now is because there's something that I'm really concerned about. Is now a good time to talk about it? And they're going to be like, well, yeah, I mean, did I win the lottery or what happened? You know, they want to, they're going to be, and when they give you permission to express your concern, now they just open the door for them to receive what it is that you're going to say. And you say, well, you know, Mr. Jones, you've been coming to me now for 15 years. And I got to be honest with you, over the last 7 or 8 years, I've noticed that your front teeth have been starting to wear, and that wear is starting to increase at a pace that I'm just not comfortable not saying anything anymore. And you deserve to know what's going on in there. And I'm concerned about it. And so I just wanted to take this moment to just express that to you.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to react negatively to that?
Right.
You know, and the reality is that I don't care what profession you're in, whether you're a car salesman, you work at a chemical plant or whatever it is, you're expected to improve at your job,
right?
You're expected to get better at what it is that you do. To think that our patients aren't expecting us to get better at what we do or take better care of them is, again, just is creating a negative situation against something that's actually beautiful and very positive.
Yeah, that's so powerful, buddy.
You know, one of the things that I always like to, the analogy I like to give is I always say that my first car was a 1986 Ford Tempo. It was an absolute dog of a car. You know, it had it had a four-cylinder engine that put out like 86 horsepower. You know, if you stopped at a red light in the summer with the air conditioning on, it would basically stall the engine out, and then it would freeze over, and the air conditioner would stop working. And I got to tell you what, I am still waiting. I check my mailbox every day for a letter from Ford apologizing for what a piece of crap that car was, because they can do so much better now, right? They
it ain't
so
coming, buddy. Better. You're wasting your time.
No, I'm looking, though. I'm waiting for I thought there'd be a coupon, half off your next Ford purchase, because we just feel so bad that you drove an 86 Ford Tempo, right? So we don't need to apologize for where we are. We don't need to apologize for the commitment to improving that we're making. And our patients aren't going to react negatively to that. They're only going to react in a positive way. All this problem that we're creating, it's all up here. As Dr. Dawson's like to say, it's in your squash.
Right. Well, and Dr. Dawson also said this too, you know, not apologizing, but also forgiving, you know, giving yourself a little grace, saying, hey, look, I did that crown, you know, because it's very easy to do. You know, you said the mind of a dentist is a very interesting one, and it's more dangerous because the more you get to know, the more you expect from yourself. You expect it to be good. You know, perfection is a very dangerous disease that can happen in this particular profession. But you know, Lenny, you see it all the time. People just, you know, give themselves a little grace as they're learning. So, you know, it's a collaborative journey with the patient. And the thing I want to ask you too, the mind of a great restorative dentist like yours, it's very, how freeing is it that you could just be honest with patients and you don't worry?
It's really important not to be attached to the outcome.
Right.
So what you have to do is, I think when you're talking with a patient, you have to have what I call three C's. Have to have concern, compassion, and then care. So number one, you have to be willing to bring up a concern to a patient. And if you aren't concerned about it, or if you haven't diagnosed it, you can't be concerned about it. Right. And then you have to have compassion for the patient, because if you're talking about a more complicated issue that a patient may have, it's a big deal to them. And, you know, we become desensitized by what we do every day, but it's still a big deal. And we need to have compassion in our heart for our patients. Right. And if you show concern and if you show compassion, eventually you're going to get the privilege of providing care.
Right. And it truly is a privilege. That's awesome.
Yeah. And so, you know, most patients, they've never been told. So the standard of care of dentistry in America these days is awful. You know why? It's because it's being dictated by the insurance industry.
Amen.
Mm-hmm. And the insurance industry has no vested interest in the health of your patient. You know why? Because the next year, they're going to be on a new insurance plan when their employer switches it. And so here's my great way I love to describe dental insurance, because dental insurance has, over the last 20 years, wrecked our industry. And they're happy for it, because they've gone in from the position of not having much control and power in our profession to having all the power in our profession. And so what our job as dentists is to make sure that we're taking the time to explain to our patients what dental insurance really is.
Right.
Well, first of all, it's not insurance. It's a benefit, right? Insurance is when you have medical insurance, and if I have a heart attack, well, they're going to pay to get me healthy again after my copayment or whatever. Insurance is when I wreck my car, they're going to give me a new car, they're going to make it whole again. That's not, dental insurance is not insurance. It's a benefit. You have $1,500, you have $2,000 a year, and after that, it's on you.
Right.
So the way I love to describe it to a patient, and they get this, right, because it makes sense. Analogies are wonderful.
Yeah, they are.
I tell them, I said, I want you to imagine that you go to Sears and you buy yourself a lawnmower and you pay for it, but you don't get to leave with your lawnmower. Okay. So then you go home and you look and you think, well, goodness gracious, you know, we need to mow the lawn. Well, now you have to take a picture of your lawn and you have to mail it to Sears, and they're going to have an independent lawn consultant look at your lawn, and they're going to look at it. They're going to say, well, you know, we've reviewed the fact that you want to use your lawnmower, and what we've determined is you could probably do the job with a weed whacker.
Oh my gosh.
Just in this little area, right? And it makes no sense, because that's what dental insurance is. That's where the only way they don't have a product. The only way they make money is they have money coming in and they have less going out than what came in. And the only way they have less going out is by denying benefits.
Right. Well, I mean, we could easily go on. I mean, how many that they lose, they can't find. I mean, it's just.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not why we're here.
That's another one of those rules in dentistry is a lot of dentists think, well, the only way I'm going to be successful is I've got to be in network with a certain number of insurance carriers or what have you. And they give over control their practices, and their patients are brainwashed. The dentist becomes brainwashed, and the entity that's now in control is the insurance industry.
Right. And what these do is these little lies, they're like little pathologies that turn into diseases, because it's true. You tell a lie, like even if it's a little lie, that insurance, it is a lie that insurance completely controls your future. That's not true at all in dentistry. You can choose. Everything is a choice. I always tell my kids, you're the choice, you're the product of your choices. So these little lies become big lies. And before you know it, you believe the lies. So what you're talking about is debunking all these lies and really just getting down to the truth and making your own rules.
Yeah. So the reality is with our patients is that most, we got kind of on a tangent here about, but we're talking about kind of the standard of care. And most patients these days have just never been exposed or never had anybody take the time to express concern for what is going on with their long-term oral health, right? Because it seems that most decisions are being made one tooth at a time. Meanwhile, the whole ship is sinking,
right?
But we're worried about plugging one hole. So most patients have only been really exposed to that level of care. So they've never really had the opportunity to choose to do what's best for themselves.
Right.
And I got to tell you is that most intelligent people, when they understand what's best for themselves, eventually they're going to find a way to make that happen in their lives.
Right.
And that kind of creates another rule of dentistry is that when a patient says no, that they mean no. And when a patient says no, it doesn't mean no. It just means that they may say yes somewhere down the road, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you diagnose all these complicated problems that might be going on with a patient and they're just hearing this for the first time and they're thinking, well, how much is this going to cost? And you think, well, geez, you know, to fix your problems, it may be $10,000, $12,000. And they're like, well, how much is my insurance going to pay? And you say, well, you're going to maximize your insurance at $1,500, then the rest of it's going to be out of your pocket. And they're thinking, well, goodness, I'm worried about losing my job. I'm worried about putting my mom in a nursing home. I got a kid in college. You don't know what's going on inside a patient's head that's keeping them from saying yes right now. Mm-hmm. But they may tell you no. But if you continue to be concerned, continue to show compassion, come up with options to help to stabilize them, I'm always overwhelmed by how often a patient will come back. And it may be 6 months from now, it may be 16 months from now, it could be longer. But all of a sudden they walk in, they're like, well, I'm ready to talk about what it is that we talked about. And you're thinking, what are you talking about? And then remember 18 months ago, you talked about what you were concerned about with my teeth. And I'm ready to go down that road now. And because they were able to get their life in order to be able to take care of themselves.
Yeah.
And dentists, you know, we're weird people. We like to be all sensitive and we get rejected, right? And so the patient said no. And so now every time we see them, we're just going to give them the cold shoulder and we're going to act like a scorned lover. But that's not how we need to kind of act.
Yeah. When they come back 18 months later, it's now their idea and not necessarily yours, you know, and so that becomes their treatment plan. So that's powerful.
One of the great things that I learned from Dr. Dawson over the years is that you have to be good at explaining implications to patients. So the long-term implications of what their problem is.
So okay, go into that a little bit more.
So when you have a patient and they're showing signs of occlusal disease, wear, migration, and mobility. So what you have to be good at is painting a picture of what's going to happen to that patient somewhere down the road. Well, if they're starting to get wear of their anterior teeth, they may start to get advanced wear of their posterior teeth. They may start cracking porcelain off of their back crowns. They may break natural tooth structure. They may get more stress fractures. They may start to develop sore muscles and mastication, may start to have instability in their temporomandibular joints, all these different things. And so if you have a patient and they come in and you don't ever explain what the long-term implications are, when those things happen, if you told them about it, you look like a genius, right? Because they're like, wow, geez, Dr. Lenny was right. He told me this was going to happen and it happened. And so what do you have now? You have credibility.
Right.
Because you predicted what was going to happen for them. If you don't mention it, all that becomes is an isolated event. Oh, I broke another tooth. No big deal. I'll just fix it. I'll get a crown on that tooth. And then, you know, 8 months later, they broke porcelain off that crown and that tooth because you're putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound, right? You're not actually solving the cause or you're not diagnosing what actually is causing their problems.
Right. Yeah. And each one of these, I call them little wins, you know, like when you have a conversation like that and a patient brings up and they say, you told me this is going to happen. You told me. And I had Lee Brady. She's like, I had a patient break a tooth on the weekend. And the patient was like, you told me. And here it is. It happened. So they're not mad. You're not mad. She's like, I'm just honest. Now, these little wins, Lenny, that you're talking about, you get enough little wins, it's no different than a sports team. You now have the source of your happiness. A winning team, it's so funny. A winning team, no one complains. I mean, we just finished the basketball season. You know, I love watching college basketball. And now I have a lot of friends, as you do, that are all Heels fans. No one's complaining. They all won. But when they didn't,
especially here in North Carolina.
Now, when they don't win, you hear a lot of complaining, a lot of rumbling, right? And so that's what you're talking about, creating all these little wins. And what they do is they compound and create more of a happy. I love the word joy at this stage in my game. Now, you're younger than me, not by a ton, but you are. And, you know, you get older, it's not so much about money or killing it or all that. I mean, all that stuff is nice. But the fact is, it's about joy. It's when you look back and you've got a lot of wins, you have more wins than you have losses during the course of your week. And these are the things you're talking about. You know, I have happiness instead of a happy mess. And sometimes when you look at a happy mess, you're like, man, I have a team that they think like I do, like patients don't value dentistry and I can't find good people. Well, that's the beginning of the problem. You know, that just perpetuates. So patients can't afford dentistry. I'm in Charlotte. It's too difficult to practice here. I mean, you just hear this stuff all the time. And I love what you're talking about.
Well, you know, there's some syndromes out there that I think that a lot of dentists have. And one of them is kind of from a great therapist. Her name is Marissa Peer. And she's another one of these people from Mindvalley. And she talks about a syndrome. It's called I'm not enough or I'm not good enough. And she describes that as the biggest plague on mankind right now, is that so many of us inside just feel like we're not good enough for what we're doing. We're not good enough to be what we want to be. And most of us, you know, you can't, it's hard to love other people if you don't love yourself.
Right.
You know, and it's hard to express care and concern to our patients if inside we're not caring and being concerned about our own health and right. what's going on in our own body and our own brain. And then kind of the kissing cousin to that is that the dentists that think, well, it's called I'll be happy when syndrome. So you get out of dental school and you'll be, well, I'll be happy when I graduate dental school and I get into private practice. Right. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, well, I'll be happy when I get into private practice and I can buy this car that I wanted, or, you know, and you're constantly chasing. And one of the great things that you were saying at the Dawson alumni reunion last month was that some of the happiest dentists, you know, a lot of times have the simplest lifestyle, right? That they don't have all these things in their life, which are controlling or pulling them out of their centered self, out of their best selves that they can be. And so, you know, one of the best advice that I love to give to dentists that are coming through the Dawson Academy is that if you want to be happy and you want to be successful, is the best advice I can give you is to find happiness in where you are in the process right now. Don't think I'm going to be happy when when my practice is like Dr. Cranham's, that's when I'll be happy. Mm-hmm. Well, because he's been practicing complete care Dawson dentistry for almost 30 years. And maybe you've been doing it for 5 years or something, but, you know, find happiness in the fact that you're learning to do something, you're improving, that your staff now has the ability to be involved in something that they understand is going to be so much more beneficial for the patient. And now they're going to be able to find a lot of self-worth and happiness in what it is that they're doing for the patient.
Right.
And, you know, when you can find happiness in that moment, I think that will just lead you to internally being a happier dentist. And when you're a happier dentist, patients are attracted to you. You know, when you're confident in your happiness, then patients are ready to do treatment with you because they're going to, instead of thinking, I don't know if I want to work with this guy, they're going to think I'm in the right place at the right time, and I'm glad I'm here right now.
Right.
You know, I always say one of my favorite things, that patients can smell a lack of confidence in the dentist like a dog can smell fear, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And patients know when they're in the right place at the right time. And, you know, kind of getting happiness in here instead of a happy mess, I think is sometimes one of the biggest things that's holding us back as a profession individually.
Yeah, and you're spot on, because I always see that I'll be happy when I hit $1 million. And I have so many dentists come to me and they're like, oh, I do 1.2. If I can get to 1.7, I'll be so happy. I'm like, no, you have no idea as a single practitioner how many teeth that is. I mean, you got to up your game. And you said the word process. I love that. And you've seen so many great thinkers come in and out of this industry. And they say, when you enjoy the process, when you really enjoy the process of getting better, communicating, you enjoy exponentially what the process yields. And I had one dentist tell me this as I was doing marathon. I'm a terrible athlete and everything, but I did a couple marathons, and he goes, that's a perfect thing for you to do, because you're going to find a lot of people want to do marathons, but none of them want to do the training. Everybody wants the medal and the accomplishment. You have to enjoy the running. You got to enjoy the training, because the race is the reward. It's the, you know, because you're going to do the race with the proper process, and you're going to go, this is one of the greatest days of our lives. And he goes, that's exactly how you look at dentistry. And Lenny, you're spot on. It's right now. Think about this. Today's as young as you're ever going to be. Like, yeah. Why not totally game on? It might not be perfect, but let's take this mess and let's turn it into happiness.
Absolutely. Know? Well, you know, the biggest thing to do is to stop living in the past, because you can't change the past.
Right.
Stop worrying about the future, because you aren't there yet. And don't lose sight of where you are right now, because right now is awesome.
Yeah.
Right now is a really good time to be.
Yeah. Talk about this too, because you guys have dentists that come from all over. They get really pumped up, 2.5 days. They see things differently. And now they got to go back to an environment that doesn't see it as well. And I'm going to throw you a little cliche. I've heard this. I've never been through AA, but I've had some dentists say, you know, the problem with AA is AA works beautifully. But the problem is you can rehabilitate yourself, but you go back to a drunk environment. So how do you change a drunk environment in dentistry, you know, when you go back and you've got so much resistance everywhere? So what would you tell a dentist?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things I like to say when we're talking about implementing what it is we teach at the Dawson Academy is I'll tell the dentist, I'll say, you know what, right now you're sitting in this room with me and everybody's excited. Mm-hmm. And probably right now at your office right now, there's a staff meeting going on and you're not a part of it. and what they're thinking about is they're huddling up to get together thinking, you know what? If we can just ignore everything that they're going to say for the next week, we're good. And we won't work harder. We won't have to change anything.
Let's get to Wednesday. He'll be fine if we can get to Wednesday.
He'll be completely demotivated by then. You know, there'll be a million emergencies on the schedule and forget they're ever in Florida.
Right.
So, I mean, one of the hard things and one of the things that's so important is that, especially when we talk about the concept of complete care dentistry, is that it's got to be transmitted to your staff. Mm-hmm. Your staff members have got to understand the value of what it is that you're learning.
Right.
They've got to understand the value of being a complete care dentist and what that's going to do for the health of the patient. And, you know, because I think a lot of our staff members, I think they really care about their jobs. I think they care about what they do. And I think a lot of times we get focused in on one of the rules, right, is that our staff members are only going to be motivated by money.
Right.
And I don't think that's true at all. I think a lot of them want to be motivated by, number one, being appreciated.
Right.
Number two is being challenged. Number two is feeling like their job matters. That, you know, I don't think that in dentistry, none of our staff positions need to be considered jobs. They need to be considered careers, because it's a very skilled position, whether you're a hygienist, whether you're an assistant or even a front desk person. I mean, dealing within the dental industry, that's a skilled position. Absolutely. Right. So I think a lot of that starts with building value, because if we talk about something with a patient, and we all know that when we walk out of the room, a lot of times the patient looks at the staff member and they're thinking, hey, is this what I really need to do? And if the staff member's like, I guess, then I don't think that's very convincing.
Right.
So your staff members need to be educated to the point where they can, that they're actually a part of the support system that you have within your practice.
Yeah. And one of the things you guys do really well, I love this, because you do this, I think you do it at all of your training, but you talk about the things you're going to start, but you also talk about the things that you're going to stop doing when you get back, because you find this to be true. It's not so much getting the new ideas in. Some of the hardest work that you do is getting the old ideas out. Like, you know, well, we've always done it this way. That's never a good reason. So what are some of your big pieces of advice? Because if I'm a young dentist watching this, I go, Dr. House, I totally get it. But man, you don't understand. Like, I got all these people. Where do I start?
Well, the way you start is by, when your new patients come in the door, you start treating them in a complete care way. And that's what we teach you at the Dawson Academy, is we teach you to do a complete examination. I'll give you a great example. I had a patient yesterday that she came in to see me, a new patient, had been going to the same dentist for 20 years. Right. That guy retired. She came in and we spent all this time with her, and she sat up in the chair and she said, my goodness, you just spent more time examining me than the last 20 years combined of every examination I've had. And that was just in one visit.
Right.
And so you would think that if she's been going to the same dentist for 20 years and now she comes in for a complete examination, you would think, well, why are we doing this? But she appreciated the fact that we were taking the time to actually treat her as a person instead of just an insurance number or a tooth that needs to be fixed. And when you can actually show that care, compassion, and concern, it's amazing how the patients will adapt to wanting to be taken care of correctly. And when you do that, all of a sudden insurance doesn't matter anymore.
Right.
It just doesn't. You know, I always see these advertisements in the dental journals for these companies that are saying, well, we'll give you 300 new patients a month. And I'm thinking to myself, where in the world are you going to put 300 new patients a month? You know, talk about insanity.
Yeah, couldn't even. Now, I'm going to ask you a tough question because I get this question all the time. When you talk about a complete care exam, and I already know the answer to this, do you ask people if you want to do a complete? I know what Dr. Dawson would say. You don't, because I get that question all the time. So I get it. But do I ask patients to do this or do I just do it? What's your thought?
Yeah, so let me describe kind of what we do in my practice. And I think it's important because in my practice, I have what's called an unimpeded entry policy and an unimpeded exit policy. So what that means is you have to be careful when you come in and you say, well, from now on, every patient that comes in our practice is only going to come in for an hour and a half new patient examination. And there are a lot of patients out there that they may need to come into your practice and they may need to come in through hygiene first because right. They may call up and say, well, geez, you know, I just moved here from Austin, Texas, and I've been seeing the dentist every 6 months for the last 10 years. And why in the world do I need to come in and pay $350 to have an hour and a half new patient examination? I'm fine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you push that patient too hard, they're just going to go somewhere else. And if you come into my practice in hygiene and you have signs of instability, either in your joint, your muscles, wear, migration, mobility, and your teeth, and that's going to be an opportunity for me to ask permission to have a conversation of concern with you, what I'm concerned about. And that patient is either going to be positively reactive towards that concern, or they're going to be negatively reactive. And if they're negatively reactive, then they can stay in my general dentistry side and hygiene until they're ready to be positively reactive. And so sometimes that's an educational process, and they just need time to learn to wrap their head around what it is that we're talking about so we can start to explain implications.
Right.
And a lot of times when you show that concern and you show that compassion, that patient is now ready to come back in and do the examination the right way, but they've never had the opportunity to make that choice. Right. And if we just push on them too hard, then we just may present ourselves in a way that doesn't make sense to them. And that's fine. So ideally, I'd love to have a patient come in the first time I see him for that new patient examination, but that may not always be the best fit for everybody. Now, that being said, let's talk about the unimpeded exit policy, right?
Tell me.
So if they are going to fit within what we want as far as a patient goes, like I'm not in the habit of being in the business of supervised neglect.
Right.
So if that patient doesn't eventually start to show concern for what it is that they have, then that may be the opportunity for them to see the exit policy as well. That doesn't happen very often because, you know, again, most intelligent people, when they have the opportunity to choose what's best, ultimately will choose to do that. And so what I like to do is I like to get my patients into my practice, and then we like to start to get them either into our specialty side or in the general dentistry side. And that's all going to be dictated by what we find in that new patient examination.
Yeah. And so as you can see, if you're watching this, there's a lot more order to the practice. And it's not about the dogma, because I'm going to say this too. Sometimes people are like, well, I don't want to go to the Dawson Academy because it's so much dogma. The truth of it is that it's just your core values. When your core values come to the surface and you're honest about them, what you're going to do is you're going to be honest and people will choose to go in and out of your practice. And I love what you're talking about with the exit policy. And over time, because you've been doing this a while, you find you've got a group of people around you that you share the same core values. You're like, I like these people. Because you know this, if you're watching a dentist, your least favorite patients, they don't care about the same things that you care about. Your favorite ones do care about the things that you're caring about.
Absolutely.
And when you're intentional, you turn the mess, happy mess, into a happiness over time.
Well, ideally, the way we want to grow our practice is by internal referrals.
Right.
You know, I don't spend a lot of money every month on external marketing.
Right.
About 8 out of every 10 new patients that we get are coming from word of mouth referrals from our existing patient base. And those are always great patients. They're always ready to do treatment. They're there for a reason. They already trust you because they've been referred to you. The harder situation a lot of times is the patient that's coming off of maybe your website or some external marketing that you did. And now you have to, you know, establish a relationship from them from basically a cold start. A warm start is a patient that's coming to you because they've already been told how great you are. Your staff members are fantastic And those patients are a lot of times the easiest ones to get along with. And again, they end up becoming happy patients that want to refer you more patients. So in a complete care practice, we really only need about 8 new patients a month to really kind of maintain our steam in there. So, you know, we don't need 300 new patients a month. We don't need that much fresh blood.
Can you go back and say that again? What was the number?
About 8 to 10 new patients a month.
What? Say that again? 8 to 10. You know, because that's really important to know, because you know how this, you've got, you know, your specialty side, which is what you're trained to do. And then you've got your general training stride, and a good mix lends itself to a great result. And this is coming from a guy, you know, you don't say you're a marketer, but your marketing is fantastic. Like said this to you beforehand, your website, I wouldn't say this a ton, but there are only a few websites that I say are amazing. And dude, yours is fantastic. So if you're watching this, you need a good example of an amazing website. This guy's is one of the best, top 5 I've ever seen, for sure.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So when you're building a practice like that, it's so key to understand where all the great things come from. What other advice would you give either a young dentist who's 32 trying to get this going, or even a mature dentist that might be watching this saying, hey, look, I got 20 years under my belt. What do I do? What would you say to him?
Well, the difficult thing sometimes is that, if we've been in practice for a little while. So when we're talking about the dentists that come into our academy, a lot of times we get a good group that's young. And then we get a good group that's been in practice between 15 and 25 years. Mm-hmm. And these are the dentists that are a lot of times starting to experience burnout within their profession. And they're tired and they're looking for a different way of doing things. They kind of were fooled into the rule early on that a successful practice was one that had tons of patients. Another rule was that the only way that I'm going to be able to be successful is I got to be as busy as possible, see as many patients in a day as possible. And that's how I'll be successful. Well, that's not how you'll be successful. That's how you'll be successful at burning yourself out.
Right.
And, you know, you'll become disenfranchised with the profession. You get so in deep and integrated into this insurance industry side of our profession that you lose the beauty of what it is that we do. Mm-hmm. And so the best advice that I give a dentist is to make the decision to be sure that you are working to live and not living to work.
Right. They're
totally different things. And so when you make that decision to start to make sure that your practice is supporting your family life and your lifestyle and not letting your practice control your life, that's step number one of that realization.
Love it.
And my favorite days in practice are when I only have one patient, because I'm able to focus all my time and attention and care on that patient. And I'm able to be connected with my staff. I'm able to be relaxed in my hygiene visits. And, you know, our goal at the end of the day is to not see how many patients we can see in a day, but see how good can we do for the patients that we saw. And when we can get that mix and we get that stability in there, things just really kind of stay very consistent and very level, which is great, because that gives me kind of peace of mind for what it is that I'm doing. And I want my practice to be, you know, the catalyst that will help me to be successful in all the phases of my life. Right. And I don't want to be my practice to be the catalyst that causes that happy mess instead of happiness.
Yeah. And you said at the beginning, you know, what you guys teach, which I love so well, is there are people out there that fix teeth, and there are people that change lives, and it's not bad or good. You just have to pick and go after it. And you can make it happen in this great profession. And the thing, you know how I feel about this, but dentistry is consistently ranked one of the best professions in the country. Again, January 11th this year, number one profession. You have general dentistry, orthodontics, and oral surgery in the top 10. Three specialties or three areas in dentistry, the top 10 jobs in the United States, not just healthcare, but whether you wanted it or not, you walked into the greatest profession ever. So, brother, I'm so excited. Now, I do have a couple more questions.
Sure.
So, on this path, when you talk about the path of trying to limit the messes and happiness and the journey, Pete, one of the things that Pete said to me at the age of 24, I'll never forget. I always ask an esteemed speaker or a thought leader, like, what's the one thing? And they go, the one thing. And Pete always said this. He said, never, ever say you have it all figured out. Stay on the path of always learning. And so if I'm thinking that I want to learn more, do I have to go all the way through the Dawson Academy? I mean, I've been, I got a lot of training under my belt, or maybe I went somewhere else. Or if I'm a young dentist, do I start at path one? Like, how would I do this? Where would I pick? Where do I go?
If you haven't been to any of our Dawson courses, what you need to do is our very first course is what we call Seminar One. It's from TMJ to Smile Design. It's a great course. It's 2.5 days. We do it in Florida. We do it in Chicago. We do it in Denver. what's great about it is it sets the framework to open your eyes, and you start to be exposed to all these things that you didn't realize, you know. And one of the hard things about being a dentist is sometimes you have to experience some failures to really understand where the rubber meets the road. And when you can understand what's causing those failures, that's a wonderful moment, because that's how you can start to have predictability in your care. And predictability leads to profitability, and profitability leads to happiness, not only for you, but also for your patients, you know, because our patients want it to be predictable. So that course really opens up the door. And, you know, it's kind of like one of those, like, you know, in the one of my favorite movies is The Matrix, right?
Yes.
It's like they like plug everything in the back of your head, and you're like, you're overwhelmed by, you know, everything that you have stuff going through your brain. So, oh my gosh, what about this patient that I've already treated, and this patient that's coming the next day or what have you? So it really opens your mind. And so as far as like, should that be the only course you take? Well, absolutely not. You know, what I recommend, if you like what you're hearing, and very rarely do we experience people that don't like what they're hearing, is to try to get through our core curriculum. And the most successful dentists that implement what it is that we teach, they will get through it usually somewhere between 14 and 16 months.
Okay.
Right. And so what happens if you start to take too much time, you have too much space going on in between the classes, and you lose your momentum, or you forget information that you learned. Because if you're not back at your practice, like learning and practicing, then you're going to start to experience those dips.
Right.
And when you have those dips, then you come back and you get really motivated again, and you try really hard, and then you kind of lose, because the curriculum builds on itself clinically. The information that you're given, the skill sets that you're given, and we prepare you to be able to handle anything that you can encounter in your practice. And here's the absolute best thing about coming through our core curriculum, Kirk. It's that a lot of dentists want to come to the academy because they want to learn to do big cases, and we're going to teach you to do big cases. But here's the most absolutely valuable information that we teach you, is we teach you how to diagnose correctly so you can keep people from becoming big cases, right? Wow. And that's the most powerful thing that you can do, is find that 25-year-old that's going to someday be a 50-year-old train wreck that needs extensive dentistry. Because if you can intervene very early on, you can keep all that from having to happen.
That is the most powerful
thing. Absolutely.
That is powerful, because the truth of it is, you can authentically say to a patient, I want to do the least amount of dentistry on you or with you over the course of your lifetime. Let's keep you healthy. That is powerful, which doesn't exist in our disease model that we have and for healthcare all over. Dude, this is so good. I am so grateful. I have so many other topics I want to cover with you in this whole thing. So one more thing, I got to say this too, because I'm going to just go in right in the obstacles. You guys are fantastic at being able to empathize with a young dentist who's like, well, okay, that's a lot of money. You guys have tuition assistance, so you can actually sign up for all the courses and spread your payments out. I mean, it's genius. Like, you don't have to fork it all out at the beginning. Just here's what you have to do. You just got to make a decision. Once you make a decision, and that's with everything in life, you can figure out the details, and you guys have figured that out. Also, too, you know, if you've got like 9 kids and you can't leave, you're like, you can do some of this online too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Our online courses are absolutely fabulous. And the beautiful thing about the online courses is it gives you opportunity to do it at a pace that's comfortable for you, but also you can go back and review, which you can't do live. Don't get me wrong, there's something special about a live event, because you build on the energy that you get from your fellow dentist, and the energy that you get from talking about things during the break. So, you know, it's kind of difficult to have that in your pajamas and your bed and your laptop, right? But not that it's a wrong thing, but our online programs are absolutely fabulous, because it's expensive to buy plane tickets and sit in hotel rooms. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. Nothing beats in person, but it's called blended learning. A lot of universities have figured this out. So it's totally cool. So I've got some great comments. Benjamin Alkebrecht said, loving this, guys. And Jason Kyle said, thank you, Dawson Academy. My wife graduated last week. It changed the way we practice. Great job, Jason. So it's awesome. So Lenny, thank you so much for being on. All the links to the Dawson Academy are going to be right in the feed. Please click on them. Check it out. You can also see Lenny's website. We'll put it up there. And then Lenny, if anybody has any questions, they can reach out to you. How can I get a hold of you?
Yeah, they can email me on my personal email address, which is lennyhess@aol.com.
You still have an AOL.
I know.
You and John, I think you guys are the only two. And I only think you have an AOL because he has an AOL.
Let me tell you something really special is we're being paid to keep those email addresses because look at the advertising they just got.
Yeah. Oh, they got tons of it. They got tons of it. So thank you. And if you're watching this, you got a great question, add it to the feed. Please add. Yeah, Mark Lang said AOL ? That's so funny. So, brother, I really appreciate this. You and I are going to have a lot of conversations, and I'm just crazy grateful. And you and I are going to talk soon. So stay on for just a second. If you're watching this, please, I just thank you so much. We are so grateful you're watching this and sharing this with your friends. You find it valuable, please hit the share button. And until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. Have a great evening.
Thanks for having me.